ignorant and people are unaware of risks. And so a lot of times they undercalculate the risk and they release the monster and it eats up a couple of people and then they start to put constraints on the monster. As time goes on, we're seeing what AI can screw up with. They have caused people to kill themselves. They have caused people to kill other people, loved ones. They have put a lot of produced a lot of problems. In the same way that Elon, with his self-driving cars, have occasionally rolled into the people and harmed them a great deal. So a lot of things have unintended consequences, and humanity is not as vigilant as it should be. I agree they should be vigilant, but again, when someone's waving $1 trillion at you, you can rationalize almost anything.
Well, it looks like you guys dropped out. Or is it an issue on my end? WB2BXO here.
No, Frank. I was just giving people a chance to remark or respond or what have you. Hello, Frank. I thought we wouldn't be talking to you today because the Echo Link was down for a while.
Did someone bagel the repeater? WB2BXO.
I don't know. I assume someone rebooted the server that had the Echo Link application running. Okay. What second part?
Well, it would be people who want to say something and propose such to answer questions.
Oh, you mean the main segment? Well, you know, that's up to people. I keep on offering one or the other. If you want to talk about any aspect of artificial intelligence, since we started that first, so be it. If I just get silence, then we'll move on to the main segment.
What we had there was a pregnant pause with people thinking it was a good thing. It's a good thing. Well, you can move on, Roy.
Okay, very good. We'll go to the main segment. And, of course, along the way, if we have time, if you come up with any other things that are related to artificial intelligence, we won't disallow it just because we covered it for a good hour plus earlier tonight. Okay, so if you have any questions or topics or comments to make about amateur radio or science and technology, get ready to get put on the list. Give me your first name, your call sign, whether it's amateur radio or science and technology. If it's a simple question or a comment or a topic, try and be one of the first people to check in. If you have a list of things, it's going to take a while. Try to be one of the last people to check in. So let it begin.
WS2, I think I doubled before. I've been trying to get through.
Oh, okay, Paul. Do you want to go on the list, or you have some comment about artificial intelligence?
Just a quick comment about the AI. I just wanted to thank Wes for sending that one video over about the AI. It was very good. I enjoyed it. And that's all I wanted to say before I got away from the AI topic. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good, Paul. Wesley heard you. And so, once again, we're open for questions, topics, comments, what have you. Hit that push to talk. Give me your first name, your call sign, whether it's amateur radio related or science and technology.
John, November 2, Zulu Charlie, amateur radio. So just get off the one, Tom.
Entwigs, you know, 82BHD,
ham radio,
ham radio related.
Okay, John recognized, Jim recognized, Wesley recognized. Anyone else want to put their name on the list? Okay, John, what do you got tonight?
What happened to the net? B2BXL here.
Did something happen to the net?
I'm standing by, Roy, whenever you're ready.
Yeah, I'm ready, John.
Okay, good evening, Roy. I'm glad they got that echo link straightened out. I just wanted to check back with you on that common mode coming down Twin Lead. I did a little research myself, and, be quite honest, I know I didn't spend enough time researching it, but I did ask one guy that I consider very knowledgeable in it, and I did a little research on my own, but both explanations don't sit with me well. One explanation I found on the internet was that it travels down both leads of the twin lead, the common mode, but in the same direction. So, in other words, it's not the RF going up, you know, one side will be positive while the other side is negative, etc. This seems to be going down, which they didn't, you know, and I understand it's just an explanation. We're not using diagrams. But their explanation was it goes down. So, in other words, the common mode will be negative on both leads and at the same time and positive on the two leads at the same time, going back in the direction of the transmitter. The explanation I got from another gentleman who, you know, works in the field, as Wi-Fi, et cetera, he said that the twin lead, one side, even though it's, alternating and RF, one side will be hot and one side will be ground, and that the common mode will travel back via the negative ground side. I'm not claiming to know. I just say that I wait until I get an explanation that makes sense to me, and just I guess that's the biggest thing. Nobody really knows for sure, but there should be a consensus that everybody follows. So I just wanted to check. That's all I got. If you were able to find out anything, if you had the time to look into it at all. Back to you, AC2GS, November 2, Zulu Charlie.
Roy, can I have an initial hit at that?
Okay.
You'll have to follow up, but I think it's important when this discussion comes up, because it clicked in my head a little while back. A twin lead has two conductors. A coax cable has three. Because of the skin, there's the core, there's the inside of the shield, and the outside of the shield, the outside of the shield. And what happens with that is very interesting. What's happening on the outside of the shield is referred to a common mode current. Why it's called common mode current, I have no idea. But the explanation needs to go on from there. But I wanted to put that groundwork, because I think that's the way to talk about this type of subject. Back to Roy.
Okay. What it means by common mode is reflecting down, so it's an opposite polarity to the inner shield. It's the same polarity as the center wire. So you have a center wire that's one polarity, and it's the same as the outer shield. So since it's not a differential mode, it doesn't trap the emissions of radio waves, and it operates as part of the antenna emitting radiation. So that's what they mean by common mode. The problem is that doesn't really help in the explanation of open wire, because although coax lets you imagine it in your mind that you're simply dealing, it may be a continuous shield, but because of skin effect, the current on the outer aspect of the shield can be different than the inner aspect of the shield, and that gives you a very nice image of what common mode can be. The problem is with open wire is that it doesn't have that three virtual conductors, the inner shield, the outer shield. So somehow you have to deal with apparently the concept that there are two currents operating in different directions on the same conducting piece of wire without being able to differentiate from an inner aspect of a shield and an outer aspect of a shield. And theoretically, that's the farthest I've been able to get. And not necessarily both wires have dual currents operating simultaneously. One of the wires in the open line can reflect current in the opposite direction while the same conductor is conducting in the first direction. Now, it's very difficult for me to wrap my head around that, and I don't know if that's legitimately what the answer might be, but that seems to be the proposed method that open line has for its case of common mode radiation.
KD2, FYU.
Yes, George.
Roy, you've been on the air and you well explained a dipole. You've done it well. Picture starting with the dipole. And as we're radiating positive and negative across the dipole back and forth, if you wire the dipole, I'm just giving an example here, with a twin lead or a 450 ohm open wire line or a 600 ohm wire line, the same radiation pattern is happening. We're going forward, we're coming back, we're going forward and coming back on each lead, correct, Roy?
Yeah, but that should give you, in a simplified version, that gives you a differential current that interacts with each other. That's the reason why open line doesn't radiate.
Precisely. Now, if you're going to bring it into some type of balancing or unbalancing mechanism, either before an unbalanced cable or in front of a transceiver, you're still dealing with the same concept of a dipole working over those wires.
Again, the problem is that the way that most people think about it is that open line operates in differential mode. I can't perceive of a simplified model that demonstrates common mode currents going through a legitimate open line. Because that you know, under those cases, if you didn't have reflection back, and then you have a problem of, okay, you have reflection back where? There's really only two conductors, type of thing. So you still, I at least, still have the same problem that I have a wonderful explanation for differential mode and a lousy explanation for common mode occurring at the level of open line.
Okay, thank you for bringing me in, but the way I see it is, if you're going to be running a 300 ohm, a 450 ohm, 600 ohm right from the antenna, and it's a balanced antenna, you don't have a common mode that's running down at all.
Okay, but the problem is, if you look up whether common modes exist in open line, the answer generally seems to be yes, there are. Again, the explanations don't seem to be about environmental interactions. They tend to be about reflected currents going down one of the two wires somehow without affecting the differential transmission simultaneously.
Roy, what is the effect? What is the actual effect, the percentage of effect to be canceling the signals?
That's it. According to the literature that I've read so far, they don't really talk about negating. They simply say that with reflections, there are common mode components, even an open line, which produce effectively your open line starts to radiate RF because of the common mode currents running on them. And, you know, they don't go into great detail of the reflections and such, but they kind of make it as a generic description that in the same way that reflections travel back through the coax, they seem to be able to travel back through the open line. So there seems to be some aspect where you can have two currents operating in two different directions on the same basic conductor surface.
Okay. until this point is it's really minimal.
Well, even anything non-zero requires an explanation.
Okay, understood. KD2, FIU. Thank you, Roy.
Okay. Anyway, getting back, John, that's as far as I've been able to figure out, that apparently, you know, us poor humans kind of use the excuse of surface effect and the inside and the outside of the shield, whereas you can't kind of use that as a reason for OpenLINE, and yet the suggestion is that OpenLINE is capable of having in coexistence a forward and a reverse current simultaneously in the cases of reflections from the antenna feed point.
You know me, I'm a dog with a bone with this, because I just find it interesting, and, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, with this hobby we discuss, and antenna theory is still, you know, an unknown entity in many, many ways. What's interesting is when you just read the theory about reflected waves and everything, it can almost sound like that gentleman almost said it, where, you know, and it had a instant at a certain place, there's just a reflective wave that just diminishes the differential current, and you know, then there would almost not be any differential current traveling back down the wire. But why doesn't that happen with coax? The other thing that I found interesting is, you know, in our previous conversations on this, is that the differential mode does act as a radiator if closer to the antenna. It will act as a differential. It's a common mode, but it will radiate if you don't, for instance, have a choke and stuff for a certain amount of distance. I also try to put together, you know, bits and pieces of information where, you know, I think it's pretty well established, correct me if I'm wrong, where sometimes you cannot match, I'm just going to say a dipole, which would be any antenna, using coax, and then your hams have had success where they, you know, put in a matching balun and then have a certain length of twin lead in between or in that transmission line, and then they're able to tune it. And there, you know, I think it's a G5RV, if I'm reciting correct, you know, can tune all these bands, but it's based, you know, the twin lead acts, in my opinion, from everything that I've read, and again, this is just my own surmise, it acts as part of the antenna for a certain length via the common mode. It's a matching device. And, you know, I just put that in there if that's what's happening. What would you agree or disagree with from what I'm just saying now? And it's just out of curiosity now, you know, just to get some feedback on it.
AC2GS. Well, I think we mentioned before that there are a lot of antennas that the inherent design requires using transmission lines in common mode as a means to kind of balance the thing. So, you know, that's always been the case. There are antennas that don't need any kind of, radials or anything like that, and others that you either put a separate wire as a counterpoise or you play a game with the transmission line and you choke it at a certain point so it acts as a given length of a counterpoise. I think that the earlier example that you were talking about is more of a case of the problem between theoretical and practical. Nothing is perfect in practical. Theoretical is a construct that is never really seen in real life. And so probably there's no such thing as a 100% differential mode current traveling through any kind of transmission line. There might be very low common mode qualities. There might be very high. So I think that also kind of enters into the case.
KD2FYU.
Yes, George.
Yeah, well, the studies of common mode coming back on a what we would call a twin lead or the open wire. I mean, let's go from 300 to 600. And then you got a window line in there at 450. All right. So, yes, environment is going to affect them. There's no question about it. So what is a 5.5 to 6 inch the perfect distance for twin lead to not have any common mode? We don't know. What is the differential that is occurring? Is the 450 ohm, is it the right distance in width with the right amount of windows in the wire manufactured? Is the 300 right? I mean, we're looking for, of course, we're going to match these with their impedance, their proper impedance at the time to bring them in. But what distance? What environment are they running through? Are they the proper distances between the two leads that's going to give us what we're looking for? Comment?
Okay, one second, and I'll get back to you in a second. The distance between the two wires, an open wire or ladder line or what have you, determine the impedance of the transmission line. I don't think it affects common mode components in any way, shape, or form. The person who wanted to make a comment?
Boy, I disagree.
Okay, we disagree then. The person who wanted to make a comment?
Whiskey 1, Whiskey Oscar Romeo, W1WR. George, I said it slower. So most of the people in the AM community run 600 ohm open ladder line, and that's 4-inch spacers that use what they call fly shock electric fence insulators, and there's usually about a 12-inch space between each of those insulators there. And the crappy brown stuff, the window line, that is the worst during rain. I made homebrew 2-inch 450 ohm ladder line, and I'm using a 132 foot balanced dipole, and that goes all the way to the house into a balanced tuner, Johnson Viking Matchbox, and properly grounded there. But I have no problem. Actually, when I switched from the crappy window line, the brown crappy window line, the 450, I had much better tuning up with it and not affected by the rain there.
Okay, but I'm just saying that the distance between the two wires determines a bunch of things in addition to the impedance. But as far as I'm aware, it doesn't have any particular common mode-like qualities. Common mode are basically reflections on the transmission line going in the wrong direction.
Exactly. And if you went by the book all the time, if you went strictly, all they said in the book. I was taught look outside the box. If you look on my QRZ page, that 450 homebrew open ladder line goes down into a coil box with nice switches, and that switches that 132-foot dipole into 160. That's just my comment there. So W1WR, thank you for letting me in.
Okay, and I appreciate your comments. The problem that I have fundamentally is trying to conceive of a case where you could easily explain to someone how a coaxial cable with a double-sided inner-outer aspect of a shield due to skin effect can operate as three separate conductors. I can't make that case for open wire of any impedance. There are two wires. So what I'm left with in the literature seems to be some quick, dirty, not really well-explained comment that you can have currents traveling in two directions on the same conductor.
November 2 is a little chilly.
Yeah, John.
Yeah, just one station out there, you know, said there's not, you know, current actually coming all the way back. And, you know, I just, I myself can disprove that. You know, I was running one of the SP linears, and let me tell you, I had coming back, boy, when you touch, I got it when I was touching the darn rig. Forget about the linear. So, you know, it does travel all the way back. There is a component that's traveling, and, it's just a conversation, just everybody brainstorming here. You know, like Roy said, there's not even a, you know, a good explanation in the ARL handbook and antenna handbook. As a matter of fact, most people don't even touch upon it because they don't know the answer. They avoid it. So, you know, just something to kick around. And as Roy knows, we had an interesting conversation about one thing with the resistance between the antenna itself and the atmosphere, and they actually put a number on it. So, you know, it's all of these different pieces of information we come up with and just adding it in. So I just wanted to, you know, put that out there, that it definitely is a common mode, you know, that it is a current, it does travel back, and just put that to rest. H2GS, November 2 is with Charlie, back to you.
Proper grounding has a lot to do with also with that.
KD2IU input.
Yeah, George?
As I mentioned earlier when I started saying, picture the dipole. You have currents traveling in both directions. That frequency of current is going in both directions, and it's going to the end of the antenna with the highest voltage. It could happen easily on a balanced line.
Okay. Well, your answer is sort of, It happens because it happens. So, you know, that doesn't really get me very far. I want to know how two completely different currents in opposite directions can coexist in the same conductor, where skid effect doesn't have anything to do with it, because there is no factor related to skid effect in open lines as opposed to coaxial cables.
Another quick comment.
Sure.
W1WR again. The gentleman turned around and said he's touching his equipment, getting shocked. A lot has to do with proper grounding. A common ground. I see a lot of people daisy chaining their equipment there and not doing a common ground. Grounding has a lot to do with it. I know people with microphones, they touch their microphones and they're getting a shock from it because it's not things aren't properly ground. Grounding has a lot to do with RF and stuff like that, especially when you start playing around with amplifiers.
Yeah, I agree with you, but again, you know, that's another cause. The problem is that the literature suggests that there is a direct cause going on in open wire, and I'm just having a difficult time rationalizing two opposing currents occupying the same portion of a conductor.
They're not. They're phasing.
I don't know what you mean by phasing. It's a single wire, and it's having common mode. So I don't understand how phasing has anything to do with that.
Okay.
Yeah, John.
Yeah, I would just like to say, you know, I was the one who brought up the topic. Whenever I have a comment or anything, I put out my call sign. I wait to be acknowledged. And us guys on IcoLink, we can't tend to get in with people just at the end of Roy's transmission, just jump in and start talking. So I would appreciate that. It's a courtesy to everybody, myself, on the net. The other thing is with the station talking about the grounding. You know, I agree with you 100%, but like Roy's saying, that's a totally different topic. And what I just want to make the distinction clear is in my own experience, I got rid of that current that I was getting shocked with on the transceiver itself on the rig by putting RF chokes up by the antenna, and I even put some down by the rig. So it wasn't really a grounding issue. So I agree with you. I'm sure Roy, grounding will have the same effect. You're getting shocked, but it's from two different sources, and we're just talking about the common mode right now. And maybe grounding your rig would help just getting rid of the common mode. I could see that possibly too. You're giving it a place to go. So, but I don't see them as being like related in cause and effect or anything like that. That if you really was grounded, you wouldn't have common mode. And again, we're just talking about the avenue of travel here. Asia 2 Jazz, November 2 Zulu Charlie, back to you.
Two Hotel Zulu Echo with a comment.
Sure.
Yeah, how you doing, gentlemen? You got K2HZE over here, Tom. And I'm in the Bronx, right near the Frog's Neck Bridge. I'm actually listening to you guys by all. Guys, you need to leave reports. You got Quick King on the Echo Link. I'm following it. I'm watching it on the All-Star. So at least a 2-3 second pause, if you can. Just making a suggestion. This is really amazing. I have a bunch of people connected to me, and they're listening to you and really enjoying it. I have a friend of mine, Sean, in Australia, VK3KK, and he was very surprised to hear about all of this. And so we're really enjoying it. If you can, just a little longer pauses.
Yeah, you're quite right. We tend to quick key.
System and more people can get in as well. Some people get discouraged after they try one or two times. But please continue. Like I said, my friend Sean is really amazed. He's into doing all of this stuff and antennas and everything. So we like it. From K2HZE, Tom in the Bronx. Thank you.
Okay, Tom. Thank you. Thank you for linking your friends to us. We're available on Echolink. We're available on All-Star. We even are available through IRLP, the repeater. So please come back, and hopefully we'll talk one of these days.
Absolutely, guys. And see, I did it a little bit. I'm on the RF site, but I'm listening to you on All-Star and the Echolink, and I'm running 30 connections. So just to let you know, please continue. K2AZ, really appreciate it.
Okay, very good. So, John, any other comments on this subject? I think it's going to end up like my curiosity and confusion of near field, far field. All of a sudden, the near field radio emissions from our antennas are actually in quadrature delay. They're not in sync. They only get in sync as they reach the far field. And, you know, my question is, what's so magic about far field that makes their synchronizations shift 90 degrees? And I've gotten to the point of reading some PhD thesis on the subject and still not quite understanding, except that it has something to do with temporal effects.
Yeah, you know, Roy, I'm going to hold it against you. When you brought that up, it never just hit me or occurred to me, but after you mentioned it, then I started to think about it too. So thank you for one more thing that I'm going to ponder. But, you know, like yourself, I just what got me into ham radio was the fascination with radio waves and how they travel and everything. And, you know, so that's it. It's just a point that I'll keep digging, and I know you will too, and I'll bring back whatever I find. But, you know, we're accumulating on this net. Like the other station said, a lot of people, a lot of information, and, you know, somebody will hit upon it sooner or later. So I thank you again, and I'll turn it back to you.
Okay, very good. John, thank you, as always, for participating. You always have incredibly confusing and wonderful questions. George, you wanted to say something?
Deerfield?
Yeah?
Next door. I tuned all my three HF antennas anywhere between 6 and 8 years ago, and the neighbor next door had a pool 5 feet above ground, metal-filled water, the pool. That pool was removed. All my antennas are now shorter, and I noticed a big resistive and capacitive distance, a difference with a VNA that I have. So the effects of near field around my property from the neighbors next door removing that pool actually changed the resonance of my HF antennas, that being two horizontal and one vertical.
Yeah, near field has an enormous effect. You can increase the amount of energy transfer if there's an antenna receiving your signal within your near field. Once you get into the far field, you know, there's no kind of antenna design that's going to change the output of your transmitter.
Well, absolutely, and I was just offering this. I understood it. I understood it as I had tested everything after that pool was gone. I truly understood it. And I just wanted to mention to people that the environment, the local environment, has a lot to do with how your antenna is resonating.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely. By the way, a synonym for near field is transformer field, because it's the same basic phenomena that takes place in a transformer.
Is that a switching transformer? Transformers switch.
Well, no, transformers don't inherently switch. Switching power supplies change, you know, 60 cycle to a much higher frequency, so the efficiency of the transformer is improved. But all transformers have a transformer field where energy is transferred from primary to secondary, or if you confuse the wiring, secondary to primary. But it's fundamentally, near field is fundamentally the same concept as a transformer field.
They're switching inductance and capacitance.
Comment?
Yes, comment.
Yeah, WNWR. Well, George, that metal pool, and that was like ground radials. My dipole sits directly over a chain link fence that goes all the way around my property, and fortunately, my Elmer and best friend is a broadcasting engineer, and he says that antenna sitting above that chain link fence is like ground radials, which helps you improve. And your soil contents has a lot to do with your dipole and the ground in radiating.
Well, I believe it was changing the capacitance of the ground connection below me. This is a neighbor's property. It's not my property.
Well, you know, I've always kind of said that you can't really predict exactly how your antenna is going to work in your environment, because environment, especially in the near field, can affect a lot of aspects of any antenna design. So that's why commercial antennas very often are built with a little bit of a wiggle room to change resonances on it, because they could never duplicate your environment as opposed to your neighbor's or your cousin's environment. So that's why, you know, nothing is written in stone. There's no magic equation that works for every environment. Every environment interacts with radiating antennas, and you have to be aware of that. And if you're so inclined, you have to correct it in place.
Well, comment again.
Sure.
Exactly. My antenna is 70 feet at one end and 20 at the other. And a friend of mine says, I want you to build an exact antenna that you got, like you have at my house. And I said, I can build it, but it doesn't mean it's going to work the same as my house, your environment, your grounding, stuff like that. So that may change. It may be better than mine. It may be worse than mine.
Yeah, I agree entirely. Matter of fact, I kind of believe that's why when people talk about G5RVs, it's kind of strange. Some people love them. Some people hate them. I think it's their own or friends' personal experiences based upon the interactions of their local environment. You know, some are more self-contained and less variable than other designs of antennas, but I think G5RVs are very variable in nature due to the environment.
Exactly, and I promote build your own antenna. I've never had a G5RV. I know George from Radio Oasis who built them. A very good friend. He's passed on now. And maybe you start off there. And I've had people take those G5RVs and take the coax and put a ladder line on there. But I try to advocate, you know, get in. Well, most of new hams, I said, get an antenna analyzer. That's going to be your best friend. Or a V&A, learn those. But learn to build your own antenna, because then you can work with it a lot better. W1WR, thank you.
You're welcome, and I agree with you. If people are so inclined, some people just don't trust themselves, so they'd rather have someone who kind of prove the model. And even then, it's not a sure thing. But, you know, it's one of the last things that we as hams can tinker and experiment with. Very few of us is capable of electrical engineering a linear amplifier or a transceiver. But almost anyone can hack together a decent antenna.
All right, one more there. I've had a friend of mine change his antennas out and turn around how many times, and I told him, I said, I'll come over and I'll build you a homebrew antenna. And so, well, this guy I bought the antenna from says I'll make more contacts. And I said, I can sell you a bridge, too. And he keeps on because he gets on. I said, you're getting on the radio because he doesn't get on that much. That's going to make your contact. Buying another antenna is not going to make you more contacts. I said, that's a sales pitch.
Yeah, I mean, it's a business like any other business. I kind of understand it. I get a little annoyed and or depressed when one particular model that's been in use for 50, 60, 70 years is kind of promoted as a shiny new model that will solve all your problems. And again, you know, everyone's got to make a living, but I wish people could be a little bit more honest about these things. Occasionally, I assume these people drank their own Kool-Aid and believe everything they say about their miracle antenna.
Guideline, and I've been told this right from, it's a guideline. If you don't look outside the box and turn around and go outside that, you'll never learn anything or improve anything. It's just a guideline. Take it as that.
Yeah, and Dick, may rest in peace, used to tell the story, Paul remembers, of a gentleman who had a piece of wire apparently lying on the ground that shouldn't be a decent antenna, but it worked for him. So, you know, practical always trumps theoretical.
I've worked guys that had their antenna 3 feet off the ground there, and they still were making good signals. All right, I'm going to go back into listening mode again. Good evening, everyone. W1WR.
Okay, very good. Thanks again, John. Next on our list tonight is Jim. What do you got for us tonight, Jim?
I have a fairly straightforward, non-controversial question. We'll see how that goes. I'm setting up a dual-band UHF-VHF radio on my boat. And in the past, in the corrosive marine environment, I've utilized dielectric grease to deal with situations where you had a connector that was causing problems. You replace the connector, replace the wire. But a connector like a spade connector or a bullet connector, what I would do is I would pack the entire shell of the connector, you know, the kind of the insulating plastic shell, with dielectric grease and put the whole thing together and sort of squeeze out anything extra, basically excluding air and water from the connection. And it's a little sloppy, it's a little extreme, but it seems to be effective. My question is, can I utilize that same technique in the coax connector, PL259, SO239, or is it going to RF short or some other problem? I'm not talking about an immersion or out in the rain thing. It's basically, to simplify it, it's like under a gazebo. It's not in the water, it's not in the rain, but it's in the environment. So, again, packing an SO239 PL239 connection with dielectric grease, or maybe it needs a particular dry dielectric grease, cause a problem with the RF? That's the question.
Quick comment.
Okay.
WNWR again. Let's go. Well, if you're in that environment, look at a marine type of antenna like Shakespeare. Shakespeare makes it, and because you got those on boats. We got them on our auxiliary coast guards in our police boats, in our fire boats. They use Shakespeare there. Look up and see if it's in the right bandwidth that you want. If not, 3M makes a waterproof tape wrap, not electrical tape, waterproof there, and the same thing the guys use on your power lines. And that may help it instead of packing it with grease there and wrap it. And a lot of guys use that out in environments on their regular amateur radios. And that could solve your problems there with that tape.
KD2FIU.
Yeah, George, by the way, I agree with you that would work, but also I think the dielectric grease would work. I mean, that's one of the long list of variations that people have published about how they waterproof their transmission line. Over to you, George.
I understand this to be a PL-259 to SO-239 connection in a moist environment. Is that correct, Jim?
That's fairly correct. The actual connection is at the actual back of the radio, which is going to be sitting on the dashboard. So it's not it's not deluged, but it's subjected to the effects of the. I'm doing away with any connection at all at the antenna, the coax to antenna connection. That's going to be soldered coax right to the antenna elements, because I've discovered that out in the actual salt spray, what you want, the non-SO239 connectors do not belong out in that environment. So that's not an issue. At the back of the rig, that's relatively protected, but in the marine environment, I'm thinking of packing the connector with dielectric grease. Dielectric grease does not cause a problem in a DC connection, if you do that, but would it cause a problem in an RF connection?
Yeah, it was breaking up. I was getting a portion of this. Are you talking about at the radio connection?
Yes.
In a moist environment.
Moist like on the dashboard. It's not moist. It's in the marine environment, but it's not drenched. It's not getting rained on. It's not getting much salt spray. But occasionally, you know, it's, water goes around. It's a boat.
I do two things when I really want to seal up. A PL-259 to an SO-39. For one thing, if you notice when you're cranking down a PL-259 on an SO-239 connector, you have teeth that match. We follow that, correct?
Okay, so you got to get that right and get it stuck up. And then to throw a monkey wrench into this a little bit more, I have an actual legitimate marine radio that's mounted quite well and it's in a good situation. I'm looking to do a dual band ham radio, and it's a $99, it's not the $800 marine radio, and I'm not intending to leave it there out in the elements. I'll put it away when I'm not using it, but I need to be able to install it back in place on the dashboard when I want to use it. I guess that clarifies a little more. But yes, the teeth, go on.
Okay, following the fact that those teeth that match for the outer shield that are coming in on the PL-259 to the SO-239 are actually the outer shield connection. Follow that. You want to seal that also internally. And I do it very simply for all of my outdoor connections with Teflon white pipe tape internally matched on a very short distance. On the inner side, at the final end, for example, if you're going to be putting that on and there is a 3/8 to a half inch travel of that connector, go on the SO239 on the radio side and wrap it with about a quarter inch wide of the pipe, white pipe tape, the Teflon white tape. And then, because you're bringing in your outer shield right to it to match it with the teeth, then bring the outer shield of the cable and screw over that maybe tiny bit, quarter inch amount of a pipe, white pipe tape that you've put there, and that goes tight. Now you're going to wrap the outside with a coax seal or coax tape that you want to do, going, of course, from the connection downward on the cable.
Yes, Chris, recognized. By the way, that's pretty good advice, that you could use the grease on the outer threads, and that will give you the water tightness you want. Not necessary to pour a lot of grease into the core of the two connectors. Over to you, Chris.
KD2FIU.
Yeah, Chris first. He's been calling out.
Second FIU. Jim, my advice, I had a tuna boat for the last 30 years, offshore tuna boat, went through a million radios, antennas, whatnot over the years. What you do on the side of the connector is almost meaningless, so the only thing that works is to keep the water from hitting the connector, and that includes the outside of the connector, because as you keep talking, the marine environment, it's salt water. I mean, let's get to it. It's salt water, water spray, it's in air, it's humid, and you got to keep the water off of the outside of the connector because it will eat right through the connector, and I've had that on the VHF radios. So the best thing to do, the only thing that I have ever found to work is atomic tape, the tape they're describing. It's that tape you pull real tightly around, and it kind of molds it. Chemically, it molds right to itself, and that will save your connector forever until you take that tape off. The only thing that works. Forget about the grease. Waste of time.
KD2FIU.
Tape's not waterproof.
Yeah, George.
I'm explaining how to do it inside and outside. There was a very big difference here. Everybody's coming out and saying, you got to do it outside, outside. I'm explaining how to do it inside with a very, very delicate touch and a small amount of quarter inch of white pipe tape to be used, raising it up on the SO239 shield so that you do push the connector in, and as you're tightening the screw of the outside of the SO239 shield, you are going against the white tape. Now you've inserted the shield with an insulation. Then you come down on the outside with your antenna coax seal.
Something different. Atomic tape is I don't know what it's made out of, but it is absolutely waterproof. But yeah, and George, I understand what you're saying, George, and that would work on the inside, but the problem is the salt water will rot right through the outside of the detector if you don't cover it up. So if you cover it up and make the connector waterproof, the inside is meaningless because there is no water intrusion, and that's really what you need on the boat. So I strongly recommend, believe me, I've done this a million times on boats, not only my own, other people's. You got to waterproof that connector, and atomic tape's the only thing I ever found that worked.
KD2FIU, I want to continue this. I did finish with saying that you have to have an outside coax seal.
KD2VHT, can I take this into discussion back for a minute to clarify what we're talking about?
Please do, Jim.
All of this is good information, and I'm well received. But you're not catching what I'm trying to do here. I have a marine radio that's set up high on the ceiling of the cabin, well protected, well set up, with all the protections you guys are talking about in place. This is a second radio, inexpensive, like an 8-tone UV-779 dual-band radio I'm going to be putting on the dashboard. It's not going to stay there. It would not last a couple weeks out in the environment at the dock. It would either be rotten or stolen. This is something that I'll put there as a hobbyist radio, so I have to disconnect it and reconnect it when I put it in. The DC connections I've got squared away pretty good, but I need to connect and disconnect an SO239 PL259 connection at the back of the radio every time I use the boat. It's a far less than ideal situation. So my only real question is, not all these suggestions about what I should use, if I flood the connector with dielectric grease, will it have a deleterious RF effect? Well, back to the group.
In a word, the dielectric grease is not going to be affected by RF. Some people like it, some people hate it. It can be messy. You shouldn't really need to put it on the inside. You should put it on the threads. But Chris is right. That's putting atomic tape around it is belts and suspenders. So you know that your pants will never fall down.
Comment.
Sure.
UNWR. Well, this is the same tape that the power companies use, guys use on their coaxer, PL259, to seal everything all up there. It's by Scott. It's rubber majestic tape, number 2228. Look this up. A lot of guys use this, and that'll seal your problems of moisture.
You're missing my point. I need to take this connection on and off every time I use the boat. So taping it up and pretending I've sealed the water out of it is not going to work. I need something that will. The radio is going to be a temporary radio. What's it going to last? A year or two use it on the water. It's a $100 radio. I'll have to replace it. It's not built for that environment. I just need the spot to last as long as the radio. The weak spot is the antenna connection.
K2SDP.
Call the WSD and make yourself a quick disconnect.
Yeah, but this quick disconnect, he's not sealing anything. He's got to take it in and out there, so then that's just going to be an issue. Dielectric grease there, that's your next spec thing. If you can't completely do a seal, taking it on and off.
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. If that's what you're talking about at the back of the radio, that's a different story. And, yeah, that's going to wait. A little bit of grease will help. But I got a better idea. Get yourself a HT. Forget about the base on the boat.
I have that also. But I have a nice little setup. I got an Edfong antenna mounted on a marine base. I got this nice little 20-watt radio. And it'll should enhance some capabilities. Both are valid applications, I think.
And one YDY with a question.
Yeah, Hank.